You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast brought to you by Lakewood Chev. They will steer you straight with a 39.95 wheel alignment. Check it out at lakewoodchev.com.
We're joined by Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. You can follow him at Kevin is In Goal on Twitter. Kevin, I appreciate you joining us twice this week. I know you're very busy, so we'll get right to it. First question, how shocked are you that Pekka has struggled as much as he has in the first two games?
This much? Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, and it's not all on him, but, you know, obviously 4-on-11 in the first and not much better in the second and pulled. So, yeah, you know, listen, I think if anybody said they saw this level of drop-off coming, that they're probably giving themselves a little too much credit. But we talked about it on Monday, and I hate to say it because I wish it didn't happen. Like I said, like Pekka Rinne is a guy that one of the nicest men in the entire NHL, one of the classiest guys. You want to see him have success. I would love to see him win a cup. But the reality was, and we said it on Monday, there were signs, maybe not this type of a drop-off, but there were signs of a drop-off coming, especially in the Anaheim series. And I know a lot of people have pointed to the fact that his save percentage has dipped ever since the first round. I mean, 976 against Chicago, as if any goalie was going to sustain that. Comes down a little bit against St. Louis, and then down, I think it was 925 against Anaheim. And to me, that's great. And even at 925, he's sort of above his career average and above where he's been for the past couple of seasons. So I think from the analytics community, they would argue there was even a bigger fall off to come. But I'm looking more for why. And when I look at Pekka Rinne's season and I look at it, I see a season that was also filled with ups and downs. And the past couple of years have been filled with ups and downs. I mean, goalie of the month or one of the three stars in the NHL in November, sub 900 in October and December. Great in January, struggled in February, great in March, continued that on through April. And when I broke down his season and went through every goal, some of the things that are evident in his game when he's not playing well in those down spells became evident again against Anaheim, and they're back. And I'm seeing a lot of analysis about overplaying angles and high glove and short side, all of those things. And they all tie back to, for the most part, a little bit of overactivity, a little bit of needless overaggression, something that's been a part of his game for a long time, but that he's trying to sort of settle down a little bit, and it's kind of come back for him at a big time. And hey, it's a big stage, right? So you're amped up, you want to do more, and for Pekka Rinne, more is less. And I've seen signs of it throughout the season, and you're seeing it here in the Stanley Cup Finals. And hey, it doesn't help when you go 37 minutes without a shot and another 10 minutes the other night either. That's not easy.
How difficult can that be for a goaltender when you mentioned 37 minutes, you go the entire period? Like, mentally, how difficult, how draining can that be?
It's tough. But hey, like, I mean, the caveat is it's pro sports. It's a big boy league. This is what you're dealt. You deal with it. But it's tough. And I think it's especially tough for a goaltender like Pekka Rinne. And you know, again, there's been a lot of sort of dialogue and back and forth about this in the analytics community, that lower shot totals are not harder, that's not sort of, the math doesn't dictate that, doesn't say that low shot games are tougher for goaltenders. But Pekka, when you break it down on a game-by-game basis, has struggled with games where he's under sort of that 22-shot threshold. And to do it on the big stage, after a bunch of time off, for a goaltender who is a little more, again, when we talk about the extremes of aggressiveness and extra movement, those are things that make you reliant on timing. And so your timing is gone when you have a gap before the Stanley Cup final starts. When you go for long gaps between shots where you're not really getting an opportunity to sort of feel like you're in the game. The puck handling that everybody's focused on as these playoffs have gone on, about how aggressive he is getting out of the net, stopping pucks behind the net, how effectively that sets up Nashville's breakout, that's all a function, well, one of ability, but the aggressiveness with which he does it, going and getting pucks that nobody else gets, that's all a function of him trying to stay in the game. And so it wasn't just that they didn't get a lot of shots. They didn't get any zone time. There weren't even dump-ins for him to go and corral as often. And those are all things that he uses to try and overcome periods where he's not overly busy. It keeps him engaged. And so, you know, it's not an excuse because, like I said, this is big boy sports. You deal with what you get, and, you know, you better find a way to compensate. But it's something he struggled with in the past, and the mechanisms that he's sort of used to deal with it, he didn't even really have an opportunity to use those in that game. So you add the stage, you add the time between shots, you add the trend towards more aggressive play that we saw in the Anaheim series. And no, I'm not going to say I saw sub 700 or sub 800 save percentage coming, but we talked about on Monday, there were some signs that this might be possible.
We're joined by Kevin Woolley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com, taking a look at the battle between the pipes of the Stanley Cup Final. What have you made of Peter Laviolette? I guess we'll call it just playing mind games. He hasn't committed to a starter one way or the other. How floored would you be if he doesn't go back to Pekka-Rinne tomorrow?
This is a tough one. Am I surprised? No, because this is Peter Laviolette's MO, I mean, when it comes to goaltenders. I'd be surprised because it's the first home game. Because he's gotten you here, because of what Pekka-Rinne means to that franchise, and this is the first opportunity for him to appear for that franchise on this stage. But Peter Laviolette has a history of making different decisions when it comes to his goaltender. A lot of people have referenced Michael Layton in the Cup Final for the Philadelphia Flyers, and you know, UC Saros is a good goaltender, and Nashville is carrying the play, although I would actually agree with, you know, Sidney Crosby's assessment that I read the other day, that for all the talk of shot totals and out-chancing them in Corsi, they're protecting the middle of the ice, and they're doing a good job of insulating Matt Murray, much the way Nashville was insulating Pekka-Rinne up until this series, and a lot of people were downplaying Pekka's play because of that insulation. I think the Penguins have done a similarly good job in front of Matt Murray. So if, as much as I'd be shocked, and I think it will be Pekka, there's something to be said with, you don't need spectacular right now. If you're going to outplay them like this, you just need steady. And UC Saros, despite being 5'10", 5'11", on a good day is what he's listed, plays a more passive game than Pekka. He plays a more controlled game than Pekka. He's going to take away, much like Matt Murray, a little less size to do so, but he's going to take away the middle of the ice. The middle of the net, sorry. He's not going to chase. He's unlikely to get caught as Rinne did on the rebound goal that ended up being the game winner. I mean, everyone's like, oh, he's got to control that rebound with his stick. Well, no, to me, the bigger problem, he's a 6'5" goaltender who's a foot and a half, 2 feet outside his crease on the left. And when he's unable to control it with his stick, and he tried, it just went off his pad instead of his stick, he missed. He is so far out to the left that he can't get back to the right. He essentially gave himself no chance to make that rebound save. And Saros is a guy, despite being smaller, who's going to be at the edge of his crease, connected with the blue ice, probably maybe heels out or even toes inside the blue ice, gives himself more time to read that initial shot and react to it and steer it, but also is going to be in position almost right away for the rebound. So as much as I do not think it's happening, from a style perspective and what the Nashville Predators, if they really believe they just need steady right now, and given the history of Pekka-Rinne against the Pittsburgh Penguins and signs that, you know, he really just isn't on top of it right now, he's not tracking well, there is that extra movement, maybe I shouldn't be surprised if it's UC Saros. And to be honest, I might have a hard time arguing against it.
On the flip side, Kevin, what has Matt Murray done so well in the 7 games he has played in the postseason?
He's been Matt Murray for the most part. I got to be honest with you, I cringe a little. I've read some stuff, I've heard some stuff, just kind of to become this blanket statement that he's been great in the Stanley Cup Finals. I'd be honest with you, I didn't think he was very good in the first game. Gives up 3 on 26, and let's be truthful, he gave up 4. One just came back because of an offside call. He didn't look as good as he did in game 2, but he gets credit for a bounce-back game. You're not going to, other than under his blocker at times, which we saw in game 1, for the most part, you are not going to score many bad goals on Matt Murray. Puck's not going through him. He keeps himself sort of middle net center, doesn't chase, doesn't get over-aggressive, and he's a big goaltender. And we saw when he's tracking as well he did in game two, you know, the glove hand is good. All the things that when he's off sort of tend to fall apart in terms of dropping the glove early and opening up the hole under the blocker. When he's on top, those things disappear too, and the only way to beat him is with a near-perfect shot. So to me, the biggest thing about Matt Murray is, at the age he is, we haven't seen him sort of abandon any of those strengths. We haven't seen him come out of his routine, come out of how he plays the game on a big stage. And that's where you talk about sort of, you hear it on the broadcast, the calming influence is the style compared to Marc-Andre Fleury. But what I give Matt Murray the most credit for is that he doesn't seem to have that panic threshold where he abandons that style even when things are going wrong. There was a little bit of chase, a little bit of extra movement, a little bit of unnecessary extra movement in his game in game one, but he settled it right back down in game two. A lot of people looked at the flurry that the Predators kind of threw at him late in the first period. I think, what was it, 5 or 6 shots in the last 30 seconds. But again, for the most part along the ice, none of them picked a corner, and he was there in position to make saves, probably tougher saves, look easy. And I think the Penguins are feeding off that right now. And frankly, the way they're defending, that plays perfectly into it, because they're not giving the Predators enough time and space to go bar down, to pick a corner, to look for some of the weaknesses that can creep into his game.
Kevin Woolley from InGoal Magazine joins us. Last one for you, Kevin. The Nashville Predators have drafted a ton of defensemen, and they've cranked them out, and they've been able to flip some to improve their team. And the Pittsburgh Penguins, they've done the same with goaltenders for the last 15 years. There's never really been a question mark from Marc-Andre Fleury to Matt Murray to the future in Tristan Jarry. Who's responsible for the Penguins drafting goaltenders so well?
Oh, I got to be honest with you. I'm not sure on the drafting end. And I'm a little embarrassed that I don't have that answer. But where I do give credit on the development end is Mike Bales is the goaltending coach. Since he's taken over, not only have you seen Matt Murray continue to develop, because he's got a really good coach in Thunder Bay, Colin Zulianello, who's actually now the Calgary Flames AHL goalie coach that he works with. Tristan Jarry works with a local goalie coach here in Vancouver that I know, Angelo Maggio, and they established a really nice base. But I like the work that Bales has done, and I'm going to apologize again here. I'm brain cramping on his number two right now that works for Wilkes-Barre, the Penguins, and I've heard nothing but good things about him as well. So I do believe whoever the scout is that makes the call, and with a lot of teams, they do have the goalie coaches or the development goalie coach in the AHL go in and have a look late on the guys they like and maybe add their 2 cents when they draft these guys. But once you get them, it's how you develop them. And Bales, the job he's done with Fleury even, in sort of settling him down from his struggles prior to Bales' arrival, you add all those things in, and you're right. They, much like the Los Angeles Kings did for a while, but when they had Kim Dillabaugh as their development coach, he's now with the Philadelphia Flyers. When you have that number two guy that can be doing that work in the American Hockey League and continuing to build these guys and build that pipeline, that's, to me, that's as big a part of it as drafting the right kids. They go hand in hand, obviously, but without the second part, I don't know that it matters, because these kids, as good as they arrive out of the draft, as much as they're prepared, they do mental drills, they do eye drills, they do all these things at a younger age, they still need that nurturing and that guidance and that development. And if you ask me, that's the difference between the franchises like Pittsburgh that are turning out and turning it into a pipeline and turning them into assets, and teams where, frankly, we're only probably, there are still some teams without an American Hockey League goalie coach. There's fewer now, but it was just a couple of years ago where it was probably half the league didn't have them. So the importance of that position has been recognized. The Penguins did a great job. Bales was the development goalie coach before getting promoted. I think the best organizations have good guys in both positions and full-time guys in both positions, and the Pittsburgh is clearly near the top of that list right now.
Kevin, I really appreciate you joining us twice this week. The balance is restored to the universe on Monday. Jason returns. We'll chat with you then. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. I just wish it wasn't at Pekka's expense.
Yes.
He needed to talk to me.
Yeah, we'll see what happens tomorrow night. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks. Take care.
Kevin Woolley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com.